Mason.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks superfan. We've got another great Sunday of action. Some really, really good games. At least one game that made me very, very sad. Before we get to the games, though, we got a new sponsor. We have officially gone big time. Huge, huge thank you to Harry's Razors. Somebody there must have listened, must have liked us, or Jay being Pod Vader's pulling some strings. So I'm just going to tell you about them real quick. They sent samples, which I highly encourage you to try out. I got my box in the mail. If you follow me on Twitter, I did a little unboxing. Check it out. I gotta be honest, as a guy who frequently has like the Andrew Luck neck beard, I am so impressed. Comes with a really nice shaving gel. The razor is awesome. It's one of those like five blade super razors that could probably chop a tree down but make it feel like butter. I used it this weekend. I actually had a really important event that I was going to, and so I kind of saved it for it, and I'm glad I did. I mean, the shave was phenomenal. They even had like a little guidebook on how to shave. Like, I'm not a very fancy frou-frou guy, but it had some tips on how to get a really smooth, clean shave, which I did not expect. And then as I was going through it, I noticed on the front of it, and I swear this is my favorite part, they've got one of those like little teeny tiny single blade, like at the front, kind of like precision trimmer things. Absolutely blew my mind. I did not expect to get that with a razor that frankly is so inexpensive. Like I don't want to call it cheap because the razor's not. It's a great razor, but it's really inexpensive. And so like I did kind of the beard edging thing to try and look somewhat decent, somewhat presentable. Again, somewhat less like Andrew Luck. Sorry to kick you while you're down, Andrew. But it was great. So just a little bit about Harry's. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price. That's why over 3 million guys have switched to using Harry's. Started by two regular guys like you and me, Jeff and Andy. They, you know, same boat as you and me. They were so sick of going to the store and just buy, you know, for $12 you get the one handle, and then to get any refills you have to spend $50 and you have to open that case that's locked down tighter than Fort Knox. So what they did, and I swear this is like the most dude guy thing ever, I'm so proud of these guys, they were like, all right, we're gonna fix it. They bought a German factory that had been making razor blades for over 100 years. That's why all their blades have a 100% guarantee. They have blades at half the price of anybody else who does a five blade razor because there's no middleman. I mean, they sell direct to you. I mean, it's literally, you go online, you order it, they have a factory, they send it to you. I got mine. I don't know if it's my German side, but I thought that part was kind of neat. So right now, there is a free trial. All you have to do is cover the shipping costs. And trust me, you want to do it. Go to harrys.com/nextfanup. That's how you use kind of our promo code to get this free deal. Here's what you're going to get. You're going to get the weighted ergonomic handle, and it feels awesome. Like, I read weighted ergonomic, I was like, what's this mean? I like bounce it on my fingertip, it's sweet. You get a 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricated strip and that little trimmer blade, which I swear I love so much. You get the rich lathering shave gel, and you get a travel cover. So it's this really nice little like cover you just slide over the blade. It's not like this massive Uber case. So to get your free trial, go to harrys.com/nextfanup right now. That's harrys.com/nextfanup. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. With that, let's get to the recap, starting with a Sunday night game. This is Justin. I'm here now with Andy, the Dolphins superfan, and Monty, the Raiders superfan. As they were the Sunday night game, the Raiders were triumphant in what I think turned out to be a really, really exciting game by a final score of 27-24. So let's start with the victor. Monty, the floor is yours.
I think the biggest question mark I have at the end of this game is, do we really want to have Amari Cooper on the hands team? You know, the Dolphins need an onside kick, and it goes right to Amari Cooper, and I'd be lying to you if I felt 100% confident he was going to come down with that.
Frying pan hands team, maybe. So this is a game that went down to the wire. It went down to the very, very end, and I don't think, and this was a game that I had no expectations whatsoever, right? Both of these teams have been so up, so down. We don't know if it's going to be smoking Jay Cutler or good Jay Cutler. It looks like we had good Jay Cutler. Looks like there was a lot of good stuff going on for the Dolphins today. Would you agree with that, Andy?
Honestly, Cutler was phenomenal today. I mean, he really was. Cutler was phenomenal. 34 of 42 passing, passer rating of 121 on the day. Did not throw a pick. Got sacked once. It wasn't his fault. I mean, literally out of the, I think he dropped back, well, let's see, 42 passes plus one sack. So he dropped back 43 times. And in those 43 plays, he was a threat to make a negative play, maybe on two or three of those 43 dropbacks. I mean, he just played an incredibly, incredibly clean game. His best game as a Dolphin by far, and his best game, frankly, since week two, when he also tossed a pretty good game against the Chargers in LA. But a lot of positives to take offensively from this game. I don't know, man. Sometimes it's just not your year, and the Dolphins are just really much worse than their 4-4 record, like significantly, significantly worse than 4-4, well, which is going to suck when it's draft time and we're 7-9 and not 4-12. But and I also think defensively, we completely extinguished the Raiders' run game. Marshawn Lynch's numbers oversell how good he was. He had a 22-yard run that helped his numbers, but I mean, we extinguished him. And the Raiders got a little bit lucky in terms of balls being batted in the air and not picked off. Or they fumbled it a couple times and didn't and were able to recover it. So I think a combination of the Dolphins getting a little unlucky and the Raiders just being a truly and, you know, genuinely talented team leads to a loss.
All right, I'm going to ignore the fact that you said mean things about Marshawn Lynch because that's unacceptable. Monty, there are some good things on your end too. Derek Carr seemed to be playing like the Derek Carr that we expected. 300 yards, super efficient, who is what, like 21 of 30, and Marshawn Lynch, who was incredible, don't let Andy tell you otherwise, with two touchdowns on the day. That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I mean, definitely not good, but not bad. I was hoping Smokin' Jay was going to give us our first pick for the year, but that didn't happen. But, you know, just to curb a little bit of the enthusiasm on Jay's phenomenal night, you got to keep in mind the Raiders are playing their third-string cornerbacks. Dexter McDonald, TJ Carey, rookie Obi Melinfanwu made his first start of the year. I mean, that's not exactly gangbusters. I don't know why the Dolphins even tried to run. If they'd have sat back there and threw it 60 times, they had to torch this secondary and scored more points than what they put up. I mean, I know you got to have balance and all that kind of good stuff, but the Raiders' defense did not play very good. Their linebackers are bad. Their secondary's bad. Lynch is, you know, Lynch is what he is. I think they brought him in thinking they were going to put up 40 points every week and they would need him in the last 4 minutes of the game to close out. And the offense just hasn't been doing that this year. Carr was efficient. There was some huge drops from Crabtree and Cooper that killed some drives. But I think what really helped the Raiders out in this game was there were some just holding penalties that just killed some awesome field position for the Dolphins in the second half. And at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, it was a close game. It came down to the wire. It's always fun when there's a one-score game. But I didn't think either of these teams played very well. And I'm looking forward to the bye. Maybe the Raiders can kind of clean some of this stuff up.
All right, Debbie Downer. I'm trying to put a positive spin on this. I'm not going to let you bring down the excitement. I'm going to throw it back to you, Andy. A player that you have been, let's say, not the most enthusiastic about, Julius Thomas. Had a pretty good game. What did you see out of him today?
Julius Thomas had a great game. Listen, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Julius Thomas had an unbelievable game. One thing that the box score doesn't say is on a crucial 4th and 9, he made a ridiculous catch that seemed like it extended the game at the time. Now, in natural Dolphin fashion, it was called back for holding. So 4th and 9 converted became a 4th and 19, which we, of course, did not convert. But Julius Thomas played a great game. It was eye-opening, I'm not going to lie. Fasano played a good game too as a blocking tight end, and I think there is hope going forward. For the rest of the season, what I'm looking for is the continued progression of Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker, Kenyon Drake, and Damian Williams as skill players. I don't think Jarvis is going to be here next year, unfortunately. Cutler is obviously not going to be here. But that's really what I'm looking for on offense. I think this game was very encouraging from that regard. And Kenyon Drake, by the way, I understand he had that fumble, but Kenyon Drake is a very good football player. And there's a reason that I wasn't as up in arms about the Ajayi trade as many other people were. And Drake is a big reason why. He can be a 1,000-yard rusher in this league, no question.
All right, Monty, we'll finish with you. Are the Raiders back on track after this? Are they looking like the Raiders that you expected? How are you feeling going forward?
I don't think they're back on track. I think that Todd Downing, I mean, I've been reading a lot, so maybe I'm getting onto the pitchforks and torches bandwagon, but he feels very predictable. He runs it on first down almost all the time, unless it's an obvious we need to pass it situation. He runs when you think he's going to run. He passes when he thinks he's going to pass, and either the wide receivers make a hell of a play to bail the team out and they move the chains, or they don't. You want to talk about tight ends. I thought Jared Cook had another hell of a game. Three best plays of the game. Giorgio Trevecchio, who may have supplanted Seabass as the Raiders kicker, going into halftime, that 53-yard kick was the difference in the game. And I was really curious about that clock management, because that 1 second seemed to stick on the scoreboard for an awful long time. But props to Devontae Parker. That one-handed catch was probably the best catch I've seen all year. And I thought Ndamukong Suh's sack fumble on Carr was hell of a play, one of the best plays of the game. And, you know, just if it wasn't for a couple holding penalties, I think that would have kind of changed the game. But the Raiders held on. I don't know if they're going to be able to put it together and make a run for the playoffs. But they got a bye week and a long time to think about it. And I'm going south of the border drinking tequila a couple weeks from now, and we'll see what they've got in store for the hated New England Patriots.
All right, Andy, Monty, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Later, guys.
Cheers, fellas.
And as we kick off our 1 p.m. game recaps, I'm here with Chris, our Saints superfan, as he just saw his now quite formidable 6-2 New Orleans Saints squad dispatch the overmanned, or undermanned, rather, Tampa Bay Buccaneers 30-10. Chris, just looking at the score, 30-10, you guys doubled them up in yardage, 470 yards of total offense to their 200. Looks like Jameis Winston left this game, but how excited are you about this Saints team? I remember last week I was like, oh, must feel good to have a defense now, and you guys definitely have a defense now. How pumped are you?
Oh, man, it's crazy. It's awesome to see. I mean, Tampa has their issues. You know, Winston's still hurt. But Jackson and Evans, that's a fantastic receiver duo. And there's a lot of talk about Marshon Lattimore, about how great he's been this year, and he has been. I think he only gave up 13 yards today. But Ken Crawley only gave up 25. You're talking about an undrafted free agent last year. So a second-year man and a rookie. And they're shutting down receivers. It's been awesome to watch.
Yeah, and on defense, I'm just looking at the box score here. So Jordan, 1.5, then half, then half. So that's 2.5, 3.5, 4 sacks for the Saints defense. You also forced 2 turnovers. So things are definitely looking up. Now, from an offensive perspective, you know, Drew Brees, 22 of 27. First of all, I think it's worth noting that any game where Drew Brees throws the ball fewer than 30 times is probably a win for the New Orleans Saints. Not because he's a bad quarterback and you don't want him throwing, but quite the opposite. 27 pass attempts means you are leading the whole time. So Brees, surgical, 22 of 27. What did you see from him today and the passing game?
I mean, it was more Drew Brees. He's the most accurate quarterback in NFL history for a reason. The only pass that he really missed on was unfortunately a wide open Ted Ginn Jr. up the seam, which would have been, I think, about an 85-yarder. But that was it. He ended up hitting Sneed for a long one later, kind of redeemed himself. But, I mean, Brees and surgical. He went in and did what needed to happen today. We won this game off defense and the backs of our running backs. Alvin Kamara, again, kid had 150 yards today, total offense, 2 touchdowns. The young players on the Saints team are just ridiculous how good they've been.
It's kind of laughable how at this time last year, and then again at this time 2 years ago, and then again at this time 3 years ago, there was talk about trading Drew Brees to a quarterback needy team and how he was over the hill. You know things are going well in Saints land when Drew Brees puts up a passer rating in the 130s and he's like maybe the fifth or sixth thing down the list of things to talk about. That's when you know things are going well for the Saints. So let's talk about your backs for a second. Kamara, bunch of rushes, bunch of catches, 150 total yards. Ingram, ever so quietly. Ingram's been, in many ways, kind of the forgotten man. 16 totes for 77 yards. I mean, that is a sparkling 4.7, 4.8-ish yards per carry. Do you think that the Saints' backs have always been this good, or are they kind of breaking out in such a way that complements the passing game and gives the team a very scary level of balance?
Well, the big difference is Kamara. Ingram was a 1,000-yard rusher last year. Ingram has only gotten better every year. But Kamara offers this dual threat the Saints have not had since Darren Sproles. I mean, you mentioned Kamara's 68 yards rushing today. He was on 10 carries. He had a 6.8 average with a rushing touchdown, and then had six passes for 84 yards and another touchdown with seven targets. I mean, he is the difference maker in the backfield right now. And as long as Ingram can hold on to the ball and stay consistent, this is a hard team to match up against.
Yeah, and then let me, because we don't have a Bucs super fan, I think it's only appropriate that I ask you a couple Bucs questions. Really going to ask you only one question. What's up with this team, man? I mean, the Bucs were everyone's flavor of the week. All the football hipsters, analytics football hipsters, were picking them to be a dark horse 11-5. Turns out they're not that good. Turns out Jameis Winston is stagnated in his – and listen, the kid's hurt. His throwing shoulder's hurt. Jameis Winston's clearly not himself, and he actually exited this game, and you saw a lot of Fitzpatrick, which is never a good thing. But what – now that you've seen him, what's wrong with the Bucs this year?
I'm going to say coaching. I'm going to start off with that. I mean, you have – if Jameis Winston was that hurt, then he shouldn't have been in the first half. They should have went into the week knowing Fitzpatrick was their quarterback. In addition to that, I mean, Doug Martin, I think they pulled him in the first quarter. He had, I think, seven attempts, and then he was done. They gave it to Barber for the rest of the game. The lack of coaching, I thought, was very prevalent with the cheap shot Mike Evans took, the fight where Winston came off the bench and had he pushed Lattimore in the back of the head, and then Evans comes out of nowhere. Cutter was nowhere to be seen in that. That happened on Tampa's sideline. And you could see Peyton was livid, screaming at Cutter at the end of the game, or during the play. They barely shook hands. Peyton just kind of brushed him off. There's a lack of leadership on this team, and it starts with the head coach. Tampa's never been shy about firing the coaches. I'd be surprised if Dirk Cutter's still there next year.
Yeah, I would too. And I remember reading something yesterday. Dirk Cutter was like, hey, man, there's just like a culture of losing in here. And I'm like, Dirk, listen, you've been the offensive coordinator for 2 years, and this is now your second year as head coach. What if that culture is you? Like, has it ever occurred to you maybe you're just not a competent NFL head coach? I don't know. Just something to think about. Last question I'll ask you before I let you go here and let you enjoy the rest of your victory Sunday. I'm looking at your schedule. This is your remaining schedule. Ready? At Buffalo. And remember, you guys have already had your bye week. After you trounced us in London, they gave you a bye right after. So you're playing through to the rest of the season. This is your schedule. Ready? At Buffalo. Redskins at home. At the Ramathors. Panthers at home. At the Dirty Birds. Jets at home. Dirty Birds at home. And then week 17 in a game where, frankly, nobody on the Tampa Bay is going to be playing because they'll probably be, 4-11 going into that game at Tampa Bay week 17. The Bucs, the second time you guys play the Bucs, that is the only easy game I see on your schedule. I mean, the Jets at home, is that really that easy? The Redskins at home, Kirk Cousins can light anybody up. So you guys don't really have any easy games. You still have the Falcons twice. You still have the Panthers again. Like, where do you see this team going? I think it's nice that you have a nice four-game above 500 cushion, but I look at your schedule and I have a tough time putting you guys at better than 10-6 just because of the strength of schedule. I think going 4-4 over your remaining eight would be a huge win. What do you think?
I mean, look, if they go 4-4, they're 10-6, which still should win this division. They're a half game up, or they're a game and a half up, I believe, on Carolina, and then Atlanta lost again today. So I mean, 4-4, I'm happy with that. Saints win the division, head off into the playoff. I think that I'd lean more towards the size of 11-5. But, I mean, it is a tough stretch ahead. Buffalo's going to be a really tough game next week. There's a good chance they'll be without Warford and Armstead for that game. It's not a defense you want to play with a patchwork offensive line. So it's going to be interesting. But, hey, you know, 6 games in a row now, we've all figured out why the Saints shouldn't win a game, and they've done it. So just going to keep riding this high and see where it takes us.
Yep, absolutely. So congratulations on your win. If you could, just be so kind to sprinkle some good luck on my Miami Dolphins tonight as we take on the Raiders. But good talking to you, buddy.
Hey, take care, buddy.
Bye-bye. And as we continue to zip around, recapping the 1 p.m. games, I'm here with Gerard, our Rams superfan, who is flying high after his team just put up 50-plus points. The second team to put up 50-plus points today, this time happening on the road in the Meadowlands. Walk me through this victory. You know, Jared Goff, 22 pass attempts for 314 yards and 4 touchdowns. That is an obnoxious level of efficiency. Has he arrived? For sure. Is he, like, definitively the guy now?
Well, he's definitely the guy for the Rams. Whether he's, like, a top 15 NFL quarterback, he's right on the cusp because he has struggled against the better defenses. But, yeah, he definitely is very efficient. Guys were wide open. And I think the Rams scored on 8 of their first 9 possessions, and then they just kind of coasted in the fourth quarter. But, yeah, the Giants have a ton of injuries, so I'm not going to say, like, oh, we're, like, the best team in the NFL or anything, but it definitely is encouraging. And they've already, in 8 games this year, they've already scored, I think, something like 24 or 30 more points than they did all 16 games last year. So, yeah, it's just a completely different offense under Sean McVay this year.
Yeah, I mean, was Jeff Fisher that bad a coach? Like, I don't understand it because you look at the Rams personnel. I mean, other than Cooper Kupp, and, well, I guess their entire receiving core is new. I guess that does make a difference. But he's just a different guy this year. Was Jeff Fisher that bad?
You know, he just ran really antiquated schemes, and his offensive coordinators the last 2 years were Frank Cignetti and Rob Boris, who probably 95% of NFL fans never heard of. He just hired these no-name coaches to be these offense coordinators because he could just tell them, let's run a 1985 style offense. And yeah, I mean, and also just hearing McVay is very much like a disciplinarian. He, like, people have to be on time to meetings or they get fined, even like the superstars. And Jeff Fisher's kind of a coach's coach who had more of a country club feel, laid back and easy practices, days off after victories. And you just can't have that in the NFL today, especially with the reduced practice times and the off season and everything. So I think McVay definitely has a good mind, but he also has brought a lot of leadership and accountability. And for the most part, players are really responding to it.
So let's get negative really quick, because there's not a lot to be negative about. And I like being negative, as you guys know. Orleans Darkwa, 16 carries for 71 yards. Gallman added 9 carries for 41. Looks like you guys didn't really stop the run that well today. Not that it mattered. I mean, when you find yourself up by 17 at the half, doesn't matter how poorly you're stopping the run, because they're just not going to run on you anymore. But what's up with the front 7? How come you guys can't stop the run?
Yeah, that has been kind of a problem over the past. You know, I wasn't really focusing on that game, but I mean, they don't have a whole lot of depth after the starters, and a lot of them are still learning the 3-4 scheme, and depending on who's playing nose, a lot of times they can get to the second level, you know, 5-6 yards down the field before. And Ogletree and Barron are 2 good linebackers, but they're not very big, so they definitely are susceptible to the run. But yeah, I think it was kind of a bend-but-don't-break defense today. But, yeah, I'm sure something they'll be working on in the coming week.
Is Eli done? Just to hop over the Giants, is Eli done?
You know, I think I said he was, like, the 7th quarterback to hit 50,000 yards today. So, but, I mean, he didn't look very interested. And other than Evan Ingram, he didn't really have a whole lot of targets out there today. So, But, you know, he's just not very good with his body language and his face, facial expressions, even when they're winning. So it's hard to know, but the Giants could have a top five pick in the draft, and they'd be wise to invest it in a quarterback with the crop that's coming out, and they're not usually in that spot. But I think he's 37, so it'd be good for them to draft a quarterback high next year, in my opinion.
And the last question, let's kind of look to the future. I'm looking at your remaining schedule. You're 6-2, first half of the season completely in the books and sealed away. Your remaining eight games in this order. You have the Texans at home next week. No Deshaun Watson, should be a win. Vikings on the road, tough game. Saints at home, tough game. At Arizona, should be a win. Eagles at home, incredibly tough game. At Seattle, incredibly tough game, and probably a make-or-break game for Jared Goff in terms of the media narrative that'll surround him entering the playoffs. And I do think he will make the playoffs now. At Tennessee, tough game. And then, of course, you have a cupcake at home, get the Niners at home at week 17. So when I look at the schedule, I see three relatively easy wins. I think Texans at home minus Deshaun Watson is a pretty easy win. I think Arizona on the road is a pretty easy win. And I think the Niners obviously at home is going to be an easy win. But other than that, the remaining five games are incredibly tough. Well, what are you looking for over the course of the second half of the season? And where, gun to your head, where would you put the final record?
Yes, I agree. Those three are easier, especially with Watson hurt now. Even if they go 3-0 in those games and then 2-3 and the other five teams are playing are all, I think, would be in the playoffs today. Even if they go 2-3 in those games, I would put them at 5-3, so 11-5 for the season, which should get them into at least a wild card. But, yeah, the big one, like you mentioned, is at Seattle, because if the Seahawks sweep them, they definitely have the advantage of head-to-head, and it would be so much better to win the division than go on the road in the wild card. But yeah, those are all really good teams. But I think they could finish season 5-3 and make it into the playoffs 11-5, and hopefully one of those victories would be the Seahawks and take the division.
I agree. I think 11-5 sounds about right in terms of what you guys are going to be. But listen, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and go Rams. You guys are looking really good for the first time, frankly, this millennium.
Yeah, seriously, at least 10 or 12 years.
All right, later, buddy.
All right, thanks. Yeah, bye.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Neil, the Washington superfan. Washington victorious over the Seattle Seahawks by a score of 17-14 in Seattle. Not an easy thing to do. I'll be honest, you and I were talking this. Man, this was a bad game just all around. I don't think either one of us is thrilled with our teams, other than I'm sure you're happy with the win.
I think we left bad behind around about 4 minutes to go in the second quarter, Justin. We moved on to terrible. And by the third quarter, we were on to absolutely desperate. So, the less, in many ways, the less said about this game, the better. It was one of those games you think, my God, if any game in the NFL deserved to be a tie, this was the one.
Yeah, sadly, my Seahawks seem to have a knack for getting into those games, which I guess is it's somewhat sort of their model. You know, I just asked the question to you, you know, what's worse? To be the team that has 244 total yards, so most of your offensive series are just like punts, or to be the team that has 437 total yards and can't do anything with them? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I think if I was a Seattle fan tonight, I would be, there'd be a list of questions I would be having. And the first one would be, do we need to have a kicker tryout on Monday? Because, I mean, the conditions weren't that bad. And he hooked, what, three field goals? He hooked them all left.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm here, right? It's not windy at all. Like, it's a little cold and a little rainy, but it's not.
It was fine.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you can't blame the weather for it. That's for sure.
He didn't seem to adjust his kicking at all, and each one missed exactly the same way. And you think, my goodness me, you're a professional kicker, make an adjustment in your process there. But so that was the first thing I'd be asking myself. The second thing would be, what on earth has gone wrong on offense? Because apart from Russell Wilson, who is simply an amazing player, and he's the reason you've got, what, 5 wins? He's the reason. You've nothing else on offense. What's happened to your offense?
Well, boy, where to begin? I mean, I think, you know, in our preview, I talked about how I thought that your pass rush was going to cause trouble and make this a closer game than people expected. I'm going to chalk that one up as a win for me in terms of prognosticating. But I mean, it was wretched. I wonder if to an extent having Dwayne Brown, and yeah, he was clearly better than what we've had before. I wonder though, if that affected their ability to make adjustments at the line and make calls. Cause he's, you know, his first week with the team. I noticed a lot of blitzing on the part of Washington. I think if I were facing a team that had a player new to the team in the starting lineup as an offensive lineman, that would be my MO as well, to try and mix things up there. But I mean, the offensive line, they did the opposite of what they normally do. They actually ran block fairly okay, but couldn't pass block at all, which is, you know, just been terrible. And so, yeah, you know, Russell Wilson threw for almost 300 yards, and that was with no time at all. I mean, he was, I don't know how many of his passes came from inside of the pocket, if you want to put pocket in quotes. I mean, he was always scrambling and running and throwing. But I also think early in the game, he was off target quite a bit. I mean, he missed some home run balls that he's usually very, very adept at hitting. So, you know, he wasn't perfect, but I definitely think he's, you know, if the fact that we had a shot to win at the end is squarely on him.
First of all, I think we can stop calling it a Seattle pocket. I think it's more like a colander. You know, those that thing you got that many holes and stuff coming out all over. It's a bit like that. What we did, interestingly, we did two things on defense. First of all, we did manage to get home a lot of the time with rushing 4, sometimes 5. Zach Brown had an amazing game, sort of spying, if you like, Russell Wilson. And secondly, a young player who came in because of injuries, Anthony Lanier, he was showing a lot of really good inside pressure over your guard and center, and that was forcing Wilson out of the pocket. He had a really tremendous game for a guy who, I think it was his first start tonight in his career. It was just incredible how we did well taking away Baldwin most of the game. And that wasn't just with Norman, that was also with Breland. And yeah, Wilson seemed to, he threw a lot of passes up in the air, Justin. A bit concerning to see him just kind of lob stuff up in the air. We had, what, 2 interceptions? Then we intercepted the 2-point play and almost got that crazy 2 points for ourselves. And there was a number of times I thought Wilson could easily have ended up with 5 or 6 picks. And yeah, you know, Justin, our defense is not great. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you know, I preach this all the time, is it's so much more about matchups than it is about anything else. And I just thought from a matchup standpoint, you know, the fact that a lot of great pass rushers were going to come on the right side of the Seahawks offensive line was going to make trouble. And it definitely did. But yeah, I'm glad you singled out the linebacker. Bobby Wagner, likewise, I thought was one of the best players on the field. He was tremendous, especially early going. Dwight Freeney, man. How is he still so productive at his age? Like, that spin move never goes out of style, apparently. And other than, you know, one busted coverage, Doug Baldwin was fairly contained for most of the day.
Freeney has always been a great player, hasn't he? He was together with Mathis in Indianapolis, but it was always Freeney. It was Freeney creating sacks for Mathis. He's an all-star rusher, Hall of Fame player. And yeah, you're going to get some good use out of him, although maybe he played too many snaps today. I'm not quite sure. You lost a couple of guys defensively. Yeah. You got a guy Smith, defensive tackle. Would that be right?
Yeah, rotational defensive end, but losing him obviously was a blow. Yeah. You know, obviously we were without Earl Thomas. Although, you know, like most of the players missing were on defense, and I don't really have an issue with the way the defense played. I thought
defense was good. Wagner was brilliant. Wow.
Yeah, oh, man, outstanding. That last series, though, where, you know, Russell Wilson, as they showed in the infographic, is like the best quarterback ever in the fourth quarter. And that wasn't any different. You know, he perfect passer rating before the very last drive of the game, scores 2 touchdowns. And then I thought we had the game won after that Baldwin touchdown with, you know, a minute 30 to go. And then, oh my goodness, did I get surprised?
Well, we kind of came up with Oh, I mean, we had that. We had the drive in the first half where we got the touchdown, and it was like, whoa, something. It was like time stood still, and all of a sudden we got a drive, and then all of a sudden it went back to what it was before, where Cousins was getting crushed. And then the game went all the way through, and it basically was from the Washington's offensive side. It seemed like Washington dropped back to pass, and Cousins was either under pressure or was sacked within a couple of seconds with that terrible offensive line we have right now. But then, yeah, right at the end of the fourth quarter, boom, 230-plus touchdown passes from Cousins to Quick and Cousins to Doxson. And that took us all the way down to the one-yard line, and Kelly knocked it in. I couldn't believe it. But you've got to give Cousins credit. He's always been the guy who couldn't bring the team back late in the fourth quarter. And there he did it against just a ferocious pass rush. So kudos to Cousins for that.
Yeah, hats off to Kirk Cousins. Then just a couple quick final things that I just want to highlight. You know, this is one of those games that the Seahawks, I'll be honest, and I'm not trying to sound bitter, like they should win this game maybe 8 out of 10 times. I mean, half of Washington missing, coming to Seattle, but 16 penalties for 138 yards. Oh, you're not going to win much with that. Back to Russell Wilson for however much duress he was under, only statistically sacked twice, which is insane.
It was, yeah. I mean, Wilson, he's a fabulous, fabulous player, but he's, my God, he's not going to last the season, Justin. I'll tell you, 8 games in, and if it carries on like that, he's not going to make the playoffs. You might make the playoffs as a team, but he's not going to make the playoffs. He's going to get crushed eventually with an offensive line like that. You can't do that in the NFL. It just doesn't work long enough. We had the same thing with RG3. You know, he was doing all these running around the pocket and all the rest of it. Eventually, you get crushed. Now, I know Wilson's a much more physically different specimen than RG3, but he's going to get crushed at some point because that's just the nature of the NFL. I just hope for you guys it's not a huge injury for the kid, but it's not going to hold up, Justin. Absolutely no chance at all. But yeah, you guys should have won the game. You missed 9 points. Let's say you kicked 2 out of the 3 field goals. That's another 6 points, so you've won the game. And like you say, every time you made a good play, it seemed like there was a holding call or a false start or something. But yeah, ugly, ugly, ugly game all around. And we will take the win and get out of there with our tails between our legs, embarrassed to have actually said this was the NFL.
There you have it. In the battle of the Washington teams, turns out the Seahawks not victorious. Thanks, Neil.
Cheers, Justin. This is Neil, your Washington Redskins super fan. Very happy Washington Redskins super fan. Here with a not so happy James, our Texans super fan. James, you guys went down at home, I believe, 20-14 to the Indianapolis Colts. How on earth did you let this happen?
Well, you know, despite Chuck Pagano's best efforts, this was allowed to happen by, you know, the one and only Tom Savage. This harkened back to the days of yore. You know, all the way back to last year when we got to watch Brock Osweiler perform very badly at quarterback. And, you know, it for long stretches of this game, I actually would have hoped for the Brock Lobster to be back slinging the ball around. You know, Savage did manage to get his first career touchdown pass, which was more a demonstration of Pagano playing really, really horrid prevent defense, as well as DeAndre Hopkins just deciding that despite how bad the quarterback is, he still has to put up some pretty good stats. The Indianapolis Colts came into the game ranked 30th against the pass. Despite that, going into the fourth quarter, Tom Savage was completing right around a third of his passes and had less than 100 yards passing. He ended up with an okay stat line, like if you're just glancing at the box score, over 200 yards and a touchdown, but you know, he played pitifully. Just, you know, throws over receivers' heads several yards out of bounds on fade routes. You know, it was perfectly embodied that, you know, the last play of the game he takes a sack when he's down in the Colts red zone with an opportunity to tie the game with a touchdown and win it on an extra point. It was just an embarrassing mess all the way around. Much like in your game, the Texans missed an early field goal You know, we didn't blare Walsh it and, you know, missed three of them, but missed an early field goal that would have, you know, maybe made the gap 3 points at the end and only would have required a field goal to tie it. But this was not a game the Texans deserved to win. They didn't really even deserve for it to be that close. It's going to be just an absolutely pitiful season. And, you know, all of the talk around, you know, just how good Deshaun Watson is and how a lot of big name quarterbacks have been going down this year. I decided to look it up on Football Outsiders stats. The difference between Deshaun Watson and Tom Savage is nearly identical to the difference between Aaron Rodgers and Brett Hundley. So, you know, you go from having one guy controlling the entire offense to, well, beyond replacement level, just so far below replacement level, it doesn't even make any sense to have him.
I guess apart from obviously your division rivals, everyone else has been just so much just enjoying watching Deshaun Watson succeed in the NFL after what was a, you know, a lot of questions about him in the draft and was he good enough? And my goodness, he's shown us he's more than good enough. Obviously, he's going to be back, well, fingers crossed, for next year. I think they were saying, I read a report today that they suspect he might be out 8 to 9 months, but when he had his first ACL, he was back after 5 months. So good chance he'll be ready to go for you next season. But back to this game, right, James, and who wasn't covering T.Y. Hilton?
I believe the Houston Texans apathy was covering T.Y. Hilton. You know, the defense kind of had that same lost look that they had last year while playing for Brock Osweiler. Just the, you know, once the opposing team had gotten to 10 points, they kind of looked around and said, well, we're not getting to double digits today, guys. Defense did throw in their own touchdown, which, you know, gave them a little bit of life, but, you know, I really couldn't blame them. There until it was garbage time, until Chuck Pagano inexplicably, you know, maybe he got a call from the league office and said, hey, man, you just got to make this game a little bit more competitive. Until he got that and started playing the laid-back prevent defense, you know, it wasn't even much of a contest. And so I couldn't really – I mean, it was a blown coverage. And that's something that the cornerbacks have been pretty good at, you know, so far this year. You saw the same thing last week with Jimmy Graham and a couple of other big plays by the wide receivers. It's, you know, it's like they're not talking, not on the same page. Whatever the case may be, it's a bunch of growing pains back there in the secondary right now, which would have been covered up with, you know, if you had Whitney Mercilus and J.J. Watt, you know, bringing down the opposing quarterback, or at least limiting the amount of time that the opposing quarterback had. But no, the only other takeaway that I have is there is no valid excuse to not bring in Colin Kaepernick for this team. You know, you can make an argument for the Packers not bringing him in because, you know, they have guys that have been in their system for multiple years that they didn't know what they had available. You can make an argument, you know, for other teams like the Dolphins, you know, they didn't want somebody to come in and challenge the incumbent starter, you know, a year down the road when Tannehill came back. You know, this is a situation where you have a rookie that has had five very impressive games, and you're just going to say, oh, yeah, you know, he's definitely the future. He's definitely set. This is already his second ACL tear. And you can't even go in with the justification of, well, you know what, let's just punt the year, tank, get some good draft picks, because Cleveland controls our first and second round pick. So if there was ever a team, and, you know, it seems like every team that loses a quarterback, it's like, well, this makes sense. But any contrived reason to not at least bring him in for a workout just does not work here. And I don't know. It's just a great time.
Yeah, sure. Especially when you see Tom Savage's stat line today, 19 out of 44 passes he completed. That's absolutely shambolic. I mean, goodness sake, it's not like you didn't have a run game. You had another, 95 yards in the running game. I mean, and your receivers have shown this year that they're good enough.
Oh, yeah, and it's like I said, Neil, he was, I believe, going into the fourth quarter, I think he was 8 for 26 for 90 yards. So you get into the fourth quarter, you get into the prevent defense, you get into the, yeah. Just, yeah. You know, one of the knocks on, Yeah, one of the knocks on the Slack group of Watson was, oh, well, he's just having Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins do all the work for him. You know, if he was doing all of – if Hopkins and Fuller were doing all of the work for Watson, you know, they were putting in a lot of overtime for Savage there. I mean, every single play was, you know, throw it into coverage, have Hopkins go up and make a play. You know, he couldn't hit them on short routes, intermediate routes, long routes, sideline routes, over the middle routes. Like, had he been playing a competent defense, you know, it would not have shocked me to have him say, you know, have like a 5-interception game.
And as you said,
it was horrible.
As you said, James, yeah, today you're going up against the 29th ranked pass defense. It's not going to get any easier going forward, I don't suppose. Where are you playing next, and how do you look in the division? Is there still an outside chance in that division? Because it's always a 9-7 division, isn't it?
Well, I mean, Jacksonville and Tennessee both won today, so that puts them 2 or 2.5 games up on the Texans, because now Texans also fall to they fell to Jacksonville earlier in the year. Now they fall into the Colts, so I believe they're 1-2 in the division. It's not looking good. I don't really see I honestly don't see a way to get to the playoffs, especially with Savage at quarterback. You know, I don't really see a way to 6 wins with Savage at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. And you've got, I mean, obviously we don't have Dan, the Colts superfan, with us tonight, but can you say something about the Colts? Were they, how did Jake Brissett look?
You know, Brissett looked pretty good. If there was ever a complaint about how, you know, the receivers were doing too much for the quarterback, you know, when it was Watson, you know, T.Y. on his 80-yard touchdown, I mean, he basically just outran all of the Houston defenders, and, you know, it was more like a punt return, you know, a nice, you know, 6 or 7 yard pass followed by a huge run. But Brissett did make some good downfield throws. The first touchdown, the first long pass to Hilton, it was definitely a good pass. It was a lot better of an outing from him compared to when we saw Brissett for the Patriots last year. And, you know, it was everything they could do to let him hand the ball off.
Yeah, sure. Oh, well, look, James, I'm totally gutted you lost your quarterback. He's been one of the most exciting storylines of the season, and I can only imagine your pain there on that one. Good luck the rest of the season, and yeah, we'll move on to another game. Thanks, James.
Thank you. Congratulations, Neil, and you know, glad you had a good outcome today.
Thank you very much. See you.
And next up, it is the Kansas City Chiefs, my team. I am Nick. And the Dallas Cowboys. The Chiefs fall to the Cowboys in Jerry World. Our Dallas Cowboys super fan, Kevin, he was there in person to see it all live. And how was that, Kevin?
Oh, it was a beautiful stadium. And I had just been to MetLife on Thursday. And the stadium doesn't compare at all. Really, really puts it to shame. But it's quite stunning. You should make your way over here one day.
Yeah, I imagine. And although the game, I think, ended up, I guess, I mean, in some ways, similar to the way that we previewed it in our battle. I mean, it really did not start off that way. We were expecting this to be a boat race, and it was really an offense, or really a defensive struggle to start out. But it was the Cowboys that came away with it, and honestly, pretty much dominated the Chiefs all the way through. The Chiefs got, you know, they ended up with 17 points, but if you look at those 17 points, I mean, 14 of them came in about, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes of game time. It was the Chiefs with a rather well-executed Hail Mary with 2 seconds left at the end of the second half, where they essentially, the Cowboys went into like some sort of a super prevent. And rather than just like, you know, running a bunch of streaking routes down the field and just having there be a scrum and people trying to jump up for it in the end zone, the Chiefs sent some of their wide receivers straight down towards the end zone, but then they left Tyreek Hill, you know, out there so he could catch it, you know, about 20 yards short of the end zone. And then all those wide receivers up there just became blockers, and it basically became like a punt. And Hill is the best guy at bringing those in. And the Chiefs were able to get a touchdown drive after that. But literally outside of that, they did almost nothing on offense. I mean, they were really stymied. The defense did a lot of the things I was sort of complaining about them not doing in these weeks past in terms of going into heavier sets, actually playing the base defense. And they played against the run well sometimes, but overall they just couldn't get a stop late in the game. And the offense really couldn't get a third down. And Chiefs Twitter has gone nuts to the point that, like, you know, Chiefs players are commenting on just like, whoa, guys, are you guys not fans of us anymore? I mean, it was the Yanks is definitely
said on Chiefs Twitter.
Oh, of course. And he did not have a great game. And the stat sheet, he came out okay. I mean, I think he had like 102 passer rating, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. And even the interception, I don't have a problem with
that interception. That was on fourth. That was for the game. He had to try to fit something in.
Exactly. It was 4th and 5, and he threw it at the sticks to his playmaker, Kelsey. And basically, because it was intercepted there rather than him just missing it or something, nothing else was open. I mean, it was basically probably saved 5 yards of, you know, of possession.
Exactly.
I don't care
better
about
than
that. Yeah, but overall, he just couldn't get the third downs. They never really got Kareem Hunt going. He only had 9 carries on the ground, although, and he's still going 4 yards per carry, but he's never got that going. And look, I mean, the Cowboys came out. They clearly figured out what the Chiefs wanted to do, and I think this is maybe a worrying sign for the future for the Chiefs that, you know, some of the stuff that they've been doing, they're extremely successful with to start out the season. Teams have adjusted to that, and maybe with just injuries and things like that. I mean, against good teams, the Chiefs just can't put all the pieces together. But again, I don't want to soak all the oxygen here. The winning team's got to be able to, you know, strut it a little bit. So Kevin, how do you feel about the win and how you guys put it together?
I mean, it was clearly a much-needed win, really. After the Eagles' dominating performance today, if the Cowboys fell to 4-4, that division race is pretty much over. So it was a much-needed win. And as you said, it was pretty much a dominant performance for the Cowboys. But I was very nervous, though, for those 5 minutes of game time on that despicable defensive blunder by the Cowboys. And then the Chiefs marched down the field pretty quickly after halftime. And really, I attribute both of those plays to mental lapses by Byron Jones, especially the Cowboys. So Byron Jones and our safeties sort of got it, not exposed, but they need to play better in the future. Jeff Heath came up big with that interception that we mentioned earlier, but essentially the same thing as an incomplete pass. So not really a big deal there, honestly. But one thing that I do need to compliment the Chiefs on is they did actually a pretty good job of containing Elliott. He did have 100 yards, but on 28 carries, so not that efficient. He did score a touchdown, which is nice. But the big surprise of the game was Terrence Williams. I don't think I could have ever predicted his 8 catches, was it, for 150 yards. Definitely wouldn't have believed you if you told me that was going to happen on our Thursday preview. So that's great to see him step up. Beasley, I mean, he wasn't that involved, but he caught 2 short touchdowns, so it's good to see Beasley do something. And then Dez actually had a pretty decent game himself. He actually got hurt on the Cowboys' first drive in the fourth quarter. Didn't come back in the game. He left with like 13 minutes left. But he had a pretty decent outing himself. He had some big third down catches. So overall, it was a pretty impressive game. What I would like to see more in the future is Dak. Dak, I feel, needs to keep the ball on those option reads more often. I mean, like that touchdown play, he was wide open to the end zone. I mean, he had to basically just make one person miss. He almost got tripped up, but he was there. And then he had another big run on one of those read options as well. So, I don't want the Cowboys to overuse it because then it becomes a little predictable, but I think they have room to add in 2 of those per game. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I was very scared of Alex Smith's mobility, and it's something that usually Cowboys have a hard time containing. I remember when we played the Chiefs last time in 2013 in KC, Alex Smith, granted that was 4 years ago, but still he's the same type of player, and with a better team surrounding him. So I was definitely scared about that. Kelsey had a pretty decent game for you guys. 7 catches, 70 yards or something. So, I mean, not great on that, but that's better than I was expecting, honestly. I was expecting Kelsey to really have his way the entire game, and that wasn't the case. So it was a great win, and as long as Sean Lee stays healthy for the Cowboys defense, I think we are in pretty good shape, because I don't know the stats right now, but the discrepancy between the Cowboys defense when he's on the field and when he's not on the field is, it's almost laughable how bad we are when he's not there. So he's clearly the quarterback of the defense. And I think the Cowboys are starting to round into to midseason shape these last three games. So the showdown in 2 weeks against the Eagles is going to be huge. I think the Eagles, unfortunately, are going to be coming off a bye facing us. So that's a little problematic. But overall, Cowboys seem to be in a good spot at 5-3. If not for the division, at least for the wild card.
Yeah, it certainly looks like the wild card race in the NFC is wide open. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, it's going to take a lot of things out of your control for you guys to totally be able to catch up with Philadelphia. But, you know, certainly for the wild card and for the Chiefs, I mean, we still have, I think, a three-game lead in the division. And Chiefs fans just need to calm down. I mean, it was a frustrating game to watch, but we're going into our bye. And we're coming out the rest of the schedule, our final seven games. I think there's two teams that currently have a winning record, and that's the Bills and the Dolphins. So, you know, I think we're probably going to be favored in every game for the rest of the year. And Andy Reid's great coming out of the bye. And yes, maybe we're beat up right now. Maybe the league has figured out some of our stuff, but that's exactly the right time to have the bye fall. We're getting a little bit healthier. We're going to come up with some new stuff, I'm sure. And the one just last note to throw in there is that we did see Tamba Hali on the field. He just came off the PUP list this week. He actually looked like he still had some bursts. I mean, the Cowboys' O-line's pretty good. He didn't always get there. He was getting with like some pressure, at least some hurries on Prescott. And so I'm sure he's still rusty. So, I mean, if he's back and we can actually have a two good rusher front and some decent edge run defenders, that would be great for the rest of the season. So, look, we're still 6-3. You know, Chiefs Kingdom fans, like if you're freaking out now, you just maybe need to pick a different sport or something. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your time in Dallas there, Kevin.
Thank you, Nick. I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
And as we continue to whip around the league, recapping the 1 o'clock games, I have Mr. James, our Eagles superfan, who just saw his team score a bucket load, 51 points, on the previously really, really friggin' good Denver Broncos defense. So, James, looking at the numbers here, 51-23 final score, 419 yards of total offense to their 226. Looks like 14 out of their 23 points came in the fourth quarter in garbage time. What do you have to say about your Eagles? You guys are really good this year.
Yes, we are. I'm trying not to get overly excited about it. I am happy with the performance thus far. First thing I want to mention, though, is the play of the offensive line in this game. Midway through the second quarter, Lane Johnson went down with what looked like a lower leg injury. Turned out it was his lower back. He went to the locker room for the last, I believe, 2 to 3 drives, one of which that we scored on. And as a whole, the offensive line played pretty darn well with the starters still in. Carson Wentz only sacked one time, probably hit 2 or 3 in the pocket. They took really good care of him. The running game got going early and often and closed things out late. All around, a total dominating performance, to say the least.
Yeah, definitely dominating. I'm just looking at Denver. So Denver, 6 plus 9 is 15, plus 4 is 19, and then 21 plus 13, 34. So Denver ran the ball 19 times for a whopping total of 36 yards. I mean, that is incredible defense on your guys' part. Meanwhile, across the field, you guys had 77 plus 51 plus 37 plus 25. You guys had about 160 rushing yards. Now,
197
let me ask you
on
this.
37 carries.
197. Well, first of all, any game where you run the ball 37 times, that's a great thing because you don't get to run the ball. In today's half-pass happy NFL, let's be honest, you don't get to attempt 37 rushes unless you're winning the whole game. I mean, you just don't. That's Stone Age football type stuff. Now,
what? Jumping out 17-3 early does help that.
Yeah, that'll help. That'll absolutely help. Jumping out ahead 17-3 against the rocket ship Osweiler. That'll definitely help matters. But completely from a selfish fantasy football perspective, is there any clarity on the Eagles' backfield? I mean, Ajayi was the best player on the field today in many ways, other than Wentz. and yet he only touched the ball 8 times. Do you see it being a timeshare going forward, or will Ajayi, who is the clearly superior talent to everyone else, will Ajayi start getting 20 carries a game again?
I don't see anybody getting 20 carries a game in this offense unless another body goes down. From this point forward, and we have the bye week coming up next, I'm looking at Ajayi and Blunt getting a combined 28 to 35 carries a game between the two of them. Ajayi today only had 8 carries. I believe he was in for about 15 to 20 plays, but got 77 yards on those 8 carries. So the plan was to get him involved in the offense early and often, and big exclamation point with his first touchdown of the season, no less, before the half ran out. So going forward, I think you're going to see after the bye week, and I can't remember who our first opponent is after the bye off the top of my head, but you're going to see more of Ajayi in the running game. The touchdown run that he had was just a little bit of a microcosm of what I was speaking about this previous week in the pregame and the preview show on Thursday. He's that in between right now for Blunt's power and Smallwood's speed, and he's that balance between the two of them. Because once he hit the edge on that, he was gone. If that was Blunt trying to get that edge, he wouldn't have gotten there because he's not fast enough to get there. And if that was Smallwood having to muscle through the first tackle, he may have been taken down. So he gets the edge, he breaks an arm tackle, he goes upfield and dives into the end zone. Again, it's going to be timeshare going forward. Expect to see still more Corey Clement, more Smallwood. You'll see them as this offense gets going. And if we keep putting up points early and often like we have been, if you're being selfish from a fantasy football perspective, good luck trying to figure out this Eagles backfield. The only thing more confusing is the Patriots backfield. So,
yep. And, things are going well in Eagles land when Nick Foles, Jolly St. Nick, actually attempts only one pass, and it happens to go for 35 yards. I thought that was pretty funny. Just a funny statistical quirk from the box score. Now, looking forward.
Return for a touchdown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he attempted 2 passes. This is, I believe, his first pass attempt. He was sacked by Von Miller. It was recovered by Brandon Marshall, returned 19 yards for a touchdown.
Mm. So
and then the one pass he actually completed. Yeah.
He's completing he's making big plays for both teams. Let's just put it that
basically,
way.
Yeah.
So Carson Wentz, this was a very typical Wentz game in that like the final numbers don't look great, but like I'm sure he played really well. Without having watched a single snap of the game, 15 of 27, 199 yards. I mean, listen. You know, 15 of 27, that's like, 54-ish percent. That's not good. 27 pass attempts for 199 yards. It's like 6 point something. That's like not really that good either. But 4 touchdowns, no picks. What did you see from Wentz today?
Yeah, 7.4 yards an attempt. He hurried a couple of throws. There was some, and give credit, Denver secondary, Harris, Tlaib. But even though Tlaib got burnt early for the first touchdown by Ishaan Jeffery, these guys are physical corners. A lot of the completions, I'm not going to say a lot, but quite a few completions came from the tight end position from Brent Celek and Trey Burton. Denver still has problems covering the tight end. I will say that. But as far as their corners on our wide receivers, they got in there and they mucked it up a bit, except for, like I said, when Jeffrey got free. And, they made it difficult to complete those passes. Other than that, Wentz was somewhat off on a couple of throws. Some were high, some were low. Some were just missed time. He was a little early on the throw. He rushed it, probably drilled a couple of passes into tight spots when he didn't have to. But, Denver coming in had the number one defense. And in certain moments of the game, they actually played like they had the number one defense on certain levels, but mostly in that secondary. Up front in the front 7, they pretty much, like I said, they were manhandled for the most part by our running game. But, it wasn't all on Wentz. Yeah, there were some things that he still needs to clean up. There was a batted ball he had early in the second quarter because he anticipated the route and didn't see the lineman, getting up as he was winding up. So those are just things that are going to come with time. And, yeah, the completion percentage doesn't look great, but it for this game, it got the job done. I was, it's pretty much what I was expecting from him. The 51 points, not so much, but you know, it's a welcome added bonus to the way we play today.
So looking ahead, I'm just eyeballing your schedule going forward. This is your remaining schedule. Ready? So you guys, primetime under the lights at Jerry World next week against the Cowboys. We'll see what the Cowboys do today against the Chiefs, or 2 weeks rather, because you have the bye, of course. We'll see what the Cowboys do today against the Chiefs, but we all know the Cowboys are very good and very talented. Then you get the Bears at home. That's a win. At Seattle, that could be a coming out party under the lights. So the Sunday night game, Sunday, December 3rd, at Seattle, could be a national TV coming out party for Wentz. And then you're at the Ramathors the next week, not an easy game. At the Giants, they might not even have their head coach by then. He might be fired. That's a win. Raiders at home, not easy, but you're probably better. And then, of course, you end with the Dallas Cowboys at home. Now, I look at your schedule. I only see two easy wins. The Giants are an easy win in the Meadowlands, and the Bears at home you should be able to handle. But other than that, you know, some pretty competitive teams, some teams that didn't look that scary in August, but the Rams, for instance, just put up 50 points just like you guys did today. So how do you look at the rest of the schedule, and what do you think you guys are going to finish with from their perspective of a final record?
Honestly, I don't know right now. I don't want to get too excited about the looking forward to the Bears. Definitely want to enjoy the bye week. As far as the rest of the way, I'm looking at least four victories. You never know how division games go. If we went out at home, that pretty much takes care of business, and we win a division. I am worried about this three-game road trip at Seattle, at the Rams, at the Giants. And, yeah, you know, you can brush the Giants under the rug, but this is a divisional game, and I take nothing for granted against them. But that first leg of it, that Seattle and Rams games, those are going to be two big games. The Rams offense throws up points in bunches just like we do. So it's going to be entertaining down the stretch. We're 8-1 right now. Like I said, at least hopefully four more victories can pretty much wrap things up for us.
And I just hope that the vomiting heads on ESPN and the national media, which is just so narrative centric, I just hope they don't look at the Rams game as some sort of like referendum on like Goff versus Wentz. Where are they in year two? Because it's going to be very tempting to dissect and analyze the game with that lens, but I don't think that's very fair to either quarterback. So let's hope narratives don't get too out of control when you guys play the Rams. But other than that, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And listen, I would kill to be an Eagles fan right now. You guys are really, really good. Wentz is the real deal. Let's just hope you guys don't crumble in January to an inferior Rams team in your own building. The Eagles have, dating back to the McNabb-Reed days, the Eagles have a very nasty habit of losing playoff games at home to inferior teams. So let's hope that doesn't happen again.
Praying on it, which is why my excitement is very tempered right now, because I've been here before.
Yep, you've absolutely been there before, but you're going there again, so have fun. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Take care, James.
Thanks.
And as we continue to whip around the league, recapping the 1 o'clock games, I have MJ here, our Atlanta Dirty Birds super fan. MJ, pretty disappointing game for you guys. I picked Atlanta. I'm of the belief that the Panthers just aren't that good. Their 6-3 record obviously indicates otherwise. But what did you see from this game that was disappointing, other than giving up 201 rushing yards, and we can get to that in just a second. What did you see about this game that was disappointing to you?
I saw the offense not capitalizing. There were too many third and short, fourth and short that we were unable to convert. Still not clicking. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with them at this point. I'm not even sure we're going to make the playoffs, to be honest, because the offense is just not clicking. It's they haven't gotten over, I think, the Super Bowl, no matter how often you hear somebody say, we're over it, that was last year. For the most part, personnel-wise, this is the same team we had last year, but psychologically, they're just not there. And you can see it in their on-field performance.
Yeah, you know, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, Matt Ryan's numbers, 24 of 38, 313 yards, a couple touchdowns and a pick. I mean, that's a pretty good game. I don't think Matt Ryan's very far from the problem. You know, so you guys gave up 201 rushing yards. 86 of that was Cam. Now, Cam Newton, for that very reason, obviously very difficult to prepare for, but just going down the line, I mean, Shepard had a carry for 11 yards. Curtis Samuel had a carry for 14 yards. I'm assuming that these came on, like, trick play reverse type things. Did they? Those two carries? Yeah, I'm sure they did. McCaffrey, 15 carries for 66. Stewart was the only guy he was the only one you bottled up. He carried it 11 times for only 21 yards, put the ball on the ground twice. But, you know, yeah. You guys got run all over. Walk me through that and how that happened.
Defensive line just not holding it together. A couple of those runs, at least a couple of those runs for Cam came off of scrambles. I think there was only one or two design runs that he capitalized on. It's as if the secondary had everybody covered that they needed to, but the coming off the front line just was not there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of game, just looking at the third down numbers, you guys were 4 of 12 on third down. They were 4 of 13. That's typically the type of game that the team with the better quarterback wins. The games where nobody's converting third downs because better quarterbacks make bigger plays. You guys outgained them 355 to 330, so no problems there. You know, it looks like this was a pretty even game. I guess my next question to you is, how does Dan Quinn, who, as we all know, is a defensive coach by trade and by way of background, how does Dan Quinn get these guys to look like the flying around, super young, athletic defense that they looked like the first half of last Super Bowl against the best quarterback of all time, by the way?
I'm honestly not sure we're going to see it this season. To go in at the half 28-3 and lose that Super Bowl, I don't know that that's something you get over very quick. I mean, there's a lot of head games coming from that that, I mean, we're seeing it on the field. I just don't know that you get over it in the short amount of time between the end of the Super Bowl and the start of this season. I mean, hell, we're at the midway point of the season and we're a 500 team. Don't get me wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong. Well, no, I'll take that back. Being 500 isn't horrible. But being 500 also doesn't win you playoff games, not at this point. So I don't know. What is Dan Quinn going to – I don't know that there's anything he can do other than try and get inside their heads. And at this point, I'm just not seeing it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm dead wrong. I hope they figure it out. But right now, I just don't see it.
What is it about the Falcons, the Matt Ryan era Falcons, that dictates you guys starting out so fast and fading? It's almost as if you're, you know, the NFL's version of, you know, the Baylor Bears, football pro Baylor. It always seems like you exit September with a 3-0 record, and then by Thanksgiving, you're middle of the pack. You know, why does that keep happening? Remember, I believe it was either 2014 or 2015, where you guys started out 5-0 and finished 8-8. Mm-hmm. Why does that keep happening?
Lack of a killer instinct. When I look at the Falcons organization as a whole, we don't always have personnel, be it coach or player, that just has that killer instinct. Because even when you look at Falcons players that have left and gone other places, they still don't have that killer instinct. I think some of it comes from the top down, from an organizational perspective. We don't always hire true football personnel. One of the other issues that I've always looked at is Atlanta Falcons ownership gets skittish. I don't think a lot of times they understand the long game. They're looking for a quick turnaround. And in the NFL, as with a lot of other things, a quick turnaround is not what you're going to get. You've got to put in the time and effort. And the Falcons owners historically will give you 5 to 6 years. And if they don't see a Super Bowl in 5 to 6 years, they fire the coaching staff and move on to somebody else. And that's just not enough time.
And then, MJ, you know, one final question. Let's leave on a positive note before we depart here. You know, I'm looking at Cam's numbers. 13 of 24, that's 55%. That's very bad. 24 pass attempts for 137 yards. I mean, that's like, you know, 6 yards per pass attempt. That's even worse. 5.8, actually, yards per pass attempt. What were you guys doing on defense that worked against Cam from a passing perspective? And the rushing is one thing, but what were you guys doing today that, you know, the Patriots, for instance, didn't do when Cam sliced them up, or the Lions didn't do when he sliced them up?
One of the things that I actually think we did well was getting pressure on Cam. You know, we didn't have a lot of sacks, but we got in his face. He got knocked down a couple times. And I think the pass rush just got to him and flustered him a bit, and he just was not completing passes.
Yeah. Cam, like most quarterbacks, Cam doesn't like it when people are around his feet, you know, pressuring him. So good stuff today, MJ. You know, sorry for the loss. You got the Cowboys next week at home. Could be a make or break game. So we'll see how that goes. But thank you so much for joining me.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. This is Justin. Now I'm on with Charlie, my bitter rival. He's a super fan of the San Francisco 49ers. You took on the Arizona Cardinals, and you could not do me a favor and give him an L. Damn it, Charlie. You had one job this week. What happened?
Well, the Niners are just outmatched. You know, they have the rookie quarterback in C.J. Beathard, a makeshift offensive line that probably looks pretty familiar to a Seahawks fan. And it was just, we couldn't block anyone for a second. But the part that you're used to seeing is your quarterback being able to spin out of that and make something out of nothing. But yeah, C.J. Beathard is not that guy. He was on his back almost the entire game. I want to say he was hit. Let's see, what's the stat? 17 hits. Let's see, 19 hurries and 4 sacks. I mean, the guy was just harassed the entire game. So, and the fighting Drew Stentons in the Arizona Cardinals, they came out swinging, and then they started giving the ball to Adrian Peterson, and he really looked like AP of, you know, 2010, 9, whatever. I mean, he was running all over us. Looked like a, you know, pretty strong team, but. Overall, the Niners, they're fighting for next year. They looked a little better than they did the last couple weeks. So happy to see that, but just not enough to get a win.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of those things. I mean, Adrian Peterson had 36 carries, like something ridiculous today? 37 carries. I mean, I know he's AP, but he's old AP. Not the old AP, but old AP. Like, he's not going to hold up under that kind of load. I know that Dr. Jones, our Cards fan, is concerned about that as well. I also, though, want to make sure that we do put some spotlight on. There are good players on the San Francisco 49ers. Like I've mentioned DeForest Buckner a couple of times. I think he's awesome. I think he's one of the best defensive players in the NFC West. And he had another solid game. I mean, they pretty much had to double team him all day to keep him from just wrecking the place. You know, on the other side, though, you know, this was what's a good way to put it? This was probably the least interesting game from maybe the most interesting team in the league right now. And we didn't get your thoughts on this before, and I want to talk about this, right? San Francisco 49ers winless thus far. At least on the field. Off the field, though, I really like the moves they're making. I loved the draft. I love, you know, DeForest Buckner, another guy they picked up last year. And then you went out and you got a quarterback. What do you think about that move? You gave up a second rounder to get Jimmy Garoppolo. You at least have him for the rest of the year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, honestly, you know, when I first saw that trade come through, I was shocked and just angry and frustrated. which is exactly the same way I felt when they had hired John Lynch. I'm like, who? What? And then, you know, I had a little time to decipher it. Honestly, I'm extremely happy that they did this. This shows, you know, everyone always says, oh, Jed York and the Niners, they're all about, you know, just making money. They don't care about their fan experience. They don't care about, you know, anything else but making money in this brand new stadium. Well, this is not something you do when you want to sit pat and just bank on your fan base. This is a risky move. And honestly, you know, we all know Jimmy G has only done 6 quarters of NFL play. Looked decent in those 6 quarters, but that's all. We're essentially bringing on someone who's been in an organization that has given out some pretty, you know, suspect QBs that have been behind Tom Brady and given them to other teams, gone to other organizations, and they've failed. So, you know, that was something that at first had me very worried. But honestly, if the Niners, I look at it the alternative. If the Niners didn't do this move, then they are banking either on the 2018 quarterback class or they're banking on Kirk Cousins, which Kirk Cousins, we saw him make some impressive plays today, but he's 30 years old. You know, this guy is older. He's never been he's never been a guy that can get you over the hump. He's a guy that can get you to the hump. You know, Jimmy G, we don't know that yet. We don't know what he is yet. Could he be a franchise quarterback? Absolutely. Could he not be? Potentially, yes. But I think it's a risk you have to do, because guess what? What do we do with that second round pick? We bring in, you know, a piece, a defensive player, maybe an offensive lineman, and it all doesn't matter unless we have a quarterback. So if you don't have a franchise quarterback, you don't have anything. I mean, there's very seldom do you see a team, you know, that is that good without a franchise quarterback. You know, the historically amazing Ravens 2000 defense that had Trent Dilfer at quarterback, or I'm sure we can think of some other ones, maybe even potentially the Russell Wilson-led Seahawks that year they won it. Although now I would say he's a franchise quarterback. But all in all, you can't do anything unless you have a franchise quarterback. And until you get one, you need to continue to go after one. So the second round pick, oh, well, you know, it's basically a 34th, 35th, maybe 33rd pick overall in the draft. So really almost a first rounder that we gave the Patriots, but it doesn't matter. Unless you can get a franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter. And honestly, if Jimmy G does get into play this year and he doesn't look good, I don't mind that the Niners go take a quarterback first overall. I really don't. Get your franchise quarterback and then do the rest.
I think that's well said. I mean, I'm on the record as being a guy who doesn't love Jimmy Garoppolo, but I mean, if he does work out, you know, what's the worst case scenario? He's amazing and you have to pay him a bunch of money. Well, okay, you've got an amazing quarterback, right?
Right?
Oh no. Or, you know, worst case scenario, you know, you spent a second round pick on a guy who is more likely than any second round pick to pan out into being a real quarterback in the league. And maybe he walks and somebody else gives him money and you get a third back as a compensatory pick. I mean, there's exactly so little downside to this. I almost, you know, not to anger the powers that be on this podcast, but I almost feel like the Patriots got fleeced on this deal because I just agree. Don't see any big downside for the Niners from this. So,
Let's talk about that for a sec, though. I mean, you talk about the Patriots getting fleeced, and this morning we heard that the Browns wanted to get Jimmy G from the Patriots. And the Patriots said, we're not looking to move on. And then, of course, the Niners went and did it and got him for a second-round pick. And then the Browns were going after A.J. McCarron for a second and a third for interdivisional trade. Well, the Browns would have given up more. So it just goes to show you the relationship that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have, that honestly, the Patriots – knew that this is the last chance they had to get anything else but a late third round compensatory pick for Jimmy G. This was the best way they can get something, but they could have gotten more. They yeah. definitely could have gotten more, and they chose not to. So I think that shows a lot for John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan as well, is that they were able to get something from the evil empire that, you know, wasn't as much as they should have got.
Yeah, if nothing else, John Lynch has shown a knack for buying things for pennies on the dollar for what people would expect, which is not bad to have out of your front office. Charlie, awesome. I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk about that Jimmy G trade. And I suppose we talked about your football game a bit, for what that's worth. Thanks, man.
Yep. And hey, Reuben Foster, leading tackler, finally got to see some flashes of the first round rookie. So hopefully he can build upon that. But other than that, really wasn't much to build upon in this game.
All right. This is Justin. I'm here with Don, the Ravens superfan. Don, your Ravens took on the Tennessee Titans, came up short 20-23 in a game that ended up much closer than at least I expected. Why don't you walk us through the action?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I thought we would lose probably about like a 10 points. I mean, I think the Titans are a good team, especially on the ground. The Ravens, the theme for the game is just this lack of passion, lack of energy. Because when you see the offense, there's no kind of spark on the offense. There's no sense of urgency, kind of just going through the motions.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy
with two
it.
Touchdowns and two picks.
And hang out.
His first interception bounced, you know, came off the hands of Rashad Perriman. Surprise! It's not really a big surprise. Rashad Perriman could possibly be the biggest bust the Ravens have ever had. He actually, like, you know, gone up in the air to grab it instead of letting it come to him. You know, he may have secured the catch, but who knows with him. Flacco's second interception was just horrendous. Staring down his receiver on the right sideline, then looking off of him, and then just having no kind of real footwork, just like throwing off of, you know, the backs of his foot. Just an awful interception there. Alex Collins got surprisingly bottled up for pretty much the whole game. He had a 14-yard run, but not too much from him. Defense played okay. After the first interception, the Titans offense had a short field, were able to score a touchdown. When we needed the defense the most, at the end of the game, after we scored the touchdown, the Titans walked right down the field and scored a touchdown, ended up being a 10-point game at that point. You know, with 45 seconds left or so, we ended up scoring another touchdown to bring in within three. And then Justin Tucker with the uncharted onside kick, and I don't think the ball may have made it like 7 yards. Not a good onside kick. As far as like my takeaways from it, again, the defense is good, especially on takeaways, but they're not great. They're not great enough to mask the horrible play by the offense all around. I'm like yelling at the TV screen, you know, when they're trying to score a touchdown late in the game, you know, hurry up, hurry up. They're having none of it. Just very, very slow, very plodding. You know, Jeremy Maclin had a couple of catches, didn't have a great game. You know, no real support from the tight ends. And they said on the broadcast that I've never seen a team throw to their running backs as much as the Ravens, and it's true. It's like Flacco looks for one receiver, dump off, dump off, dump off.
Isn't that so interesting? I mean, he's a guy whose his reputation is probably as, you know, the big arm quarterback in the NFL. And I feel like we haven't seen that deep ball out of him in several years at this point.
Right. They went for it a couple times. The one, you know, of like a play action, you know, play action boot, almost like a bootleg. But yeah, the first Perriman interception was, you know, big throw downfield, which, yeah, good play by the Titans. They show in the replay the cornerback peeling off of Maclin and going in to make the hit on Perriman and pop it up. There's no downfield game. There's no consistent running game. I think Alex Collins could still be good, you know, down the stretch, but Titans run defense came to play. They weren't messing around, really, just really controlled the line. Our defense shut the run down, you know, pretty well, I would say, with both Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray, but not enough. Yeah, another disappointing game for the Ravens. I guess thankfully they have a bye coming up next week, but I mean, best case for them might be 9-7, which may, you know, maybe in wild card territory. But if they do get in the playoffs, what are they going to do? I don't see them really doing anything, personally.
Now, we may have buried the lead, though. I mean, best quarterback of the game, punter Sam Cook with a 118 rating.
Yeah, I'm in a group chat with some friends from college, and the old adage is when he had that, and then he had a 17-yard punt that he shanked the next time after that. And I said, whenever you see Sam Cook, shank a punt, you know things are not going to go the way. And that was fairly early in the game. It's very unusual for him to do that, but maybe they put him in a quarterback. Who knows? Flacco's confident. Yeah, Flacco's confidence at this point is just shaken. It's unreal.
Yeah, but can Flacco punt? That's the real question.
He's not throwing it very well, so maybe he can get into the punting game. Maybe. He'd be the highest paid punter in NFL history at this
point. All right, Don. So once again, Baltimore Ravens fall 20-23 to Tennessee Titans. Ravens are at 4-5, just hovering around that mid tier. You think maybe they're at best a 9-7 team. There you go. That's the Ravens. That's the Titans. Thanks, Don.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
All right. This is Justin. I'm here with Ryan, our Jacksonville Jaguars superfan. Ryan, your Jaguars took on the Cincinnati Bengals, and I will be honest, pretty much put a stomping on them, 23-7. Man, your Jaguars actually turned out to be a pretty decent team this year. Why don't you tell us about this game?
Oh, man, I don't even know where to begin. First of all, let's just say 23-7. It was a win that was hardly ever in doubt, if it ever was in doubt. And that's really nice to see again. But as far as the team, let's talk about the team. I mean, obviously the defense is there. How about Blake Bortles, though? Again, he comes back and plays a nice game. We just had the bye week, but he came off of a nice game against the Colts.
He had some consecutive effective starts.
Yeah, consecutive effective starts and consecutive wins for the first time this year, because we were just going win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. So finally, two wins in a row puts us at 5-3, tied for the division because the Ravens couldn't give us any help, but that's all right. We just got to worry about ourselves. And there are so many crazy sort of effects that went on with this whole game. I don't know what you want to get into or just want me to roll into or pick some of them.
Hey, man, roll.
So before the game, Leonard Fournette is not going to play. And it comes out of nowhere because he broke a team rule. And it's like, somebody tweets out that it's because of a team photo, and then it's like, no, there's more to it than that. So Leonard Fournette, one of our best players, he's out. Then halfway through the game, AJ Green does a choke slam, like rear naked choke hold on Jalen Ramsey and punches the hell out of him. And then they both get ejected, not just AJ Green, but AJ Green and Jalen Ramsey gone. So it's totally nonsense that Jalen Ramsey got kicked out of the game. You see the replay, Jalen Ramsey shoves him, but that looks like a 15-yard penalty kind of shove. AJ Green, whoever's listening, if you haven't seen it, go see it. He literally slams him to the ground by choking him and just goes off on him. So there was some craziness with that, some other craziness with the offensive line. We didn't even really have to get into, because the fight was certainly the highlight. But in the end, it's 23-7, and the Jags get a win.
Yeah, that was quite the choke slam at that moment. The other thing that I'm kind of curious about, though, is you went and you picked up Marcel Darius. He did see some action. He shows up on the score sheet with a couple of tackles. Were you able to key into him at all, see how he was contributing to that already fierce defensive line?
Yeah, so a lot of talk about him leading up to the game, and honestly, he played the kind of game I expected, because I didn't expect him to be on the field a ton. I expect him to be on the field more as the season rolls along, and he was good. He was in the backfield at least one time, and like you said, had a couple tackles. At the moment, he was just kind of a contributor to the line. I do expect him to make some plays and really be a part of Saxonville sometime sort of soon. But this was his first game. He fit in the rotation, and I'm excited to see what they can do for the rest of the season.
So who's been stepping up offensively at the wide receiver position? Obviously, you're missing Allen Robinson all year. Looks like it was Marquise Lee this week. Is it typically him? Is it typically spread around? How's that load being distributed?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm surprised I'm being this picky because I'm just elated that we're a winning team. But my honest answer to you is nobody. And Marquise Lee is kind of the guy by default. And he had a nice game today. It catches 75 yards. I don't know why I'm being so hard, but he drops a lot of balls. Keelan Cole made an excellent catch today, but he's not consistent enough. Allen Hurns has been more quiet than I expected. So I'm still looking for improvement, I guess, as far as the wide receivers go. And D.D. Westbrook thought, you know, maybe we'll see him for the first time this year, but he did not play. So he may make his debut, I don't know, possibly next week. And I hope some sort of combo along those lines really helps. But I guess by default, the answer would be Marquise Lee.
All right, there you go. Jaguars triumphant. A pro tip to everybody out there. If your team becomes Pod's boyfriend, you're probably going to suck. But the way out of it is make him stop liking your team after you lose a couple of games and he forgets about you. Then you can go on to continuing to win, which I think is the roller coaster the Jaguars are on. So for escaping the curse, Ryan, and forgetting the win, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. And just like last week, one last point. I tweeted this out on the all-important Twitter, but in the games the Jags have won, the opposing team has scored. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
These are the point totals from the opposing teams when the Jags win. 7, 7, 9, 0, and 7. Pretty good.
Not bad. Turns out, some strategic genius, if your opponent scores few points, you're more likely to win. Thank you for stopping the show so we can get that key insight in, Ryan.
It's ridiculous. I mean, most victories, you'll see double digits, and there's no double digits in any of these totals. Come on.
All right. You're right. All right. Good times. All right. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to all the super fans for contributing. If you like the show, please tell somebody about us. You can like us, share us, leave us a review on iTunes, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You can also find us online, nextfanup.wordpress.com. You can follow us at NFU Podcast. Have any questions, want us to cover anything on the air, any feedback, you can also email us, nextfanup.gmail.com. And once again, a huge, huge thank you to Harry's Razors. Please check them out. I've tried them. They're awesome. Harry's.com/nextfanup. The promo is live. It works. Use it. Tell everybody you know about it. Harry's.com/nextfanup. With that, I'm going to leave you with Landry Jones. There you have it.